Well, good morning, boys and girls. Yeah, it's been a little while. We've had a busy couple of weeks. We are just got back from the Bonita Boat Show. We're getting ready for the tent sail event. I've just had 1,010 things going on that has kept me everywhere but back here in the studio. If you've been keeping up on our blog or Facebook or all that, you'll know it. This year is going to be absolutely staggering at the tent sale. But anyway, this is Fish and Frank in the chair. We got Captain Kale across from me. We just did the whole snook seminars at Luigi's last night.
Last night and then Tuesday night. And we got another one coming up Wednesday night.
Yeah. And
March hurts.
March does hurt. I mean, with the Bonita Boat Show. And I got to say, if you're listening down in Bonita, what a nice bunch of people down there. Bonita Springs has got a really friendly crowd down there. Next to the Charlotte County Boat Show, we get a lot of great people at the Charlotte County Show.
Yeah.
But that Bonita Springs Boat Show, just friendly people.
Not the only grumpy person in 4 days was that old crotchety Coast Guard guy.
Oh, yeah, but he's with the Coast Guard Auxiliary.
Right, what do you expect that? But everybody else were just the nicest people. Hi, how are you? Doing great. How are you?
Oh, amazing group. And we had a few French Canadians from Quebec. And we had Ontarians and all kinds of other people. That Bonita Springs Boat Show was a lot of fun.
Did a lot of good seminars down there, too.
Yeah, we did a lot of one-on-one stuff down there.
Yeah.
The boat show was nice because it was steady all day. It wasn't overly crowded. People were there really to look at boats, buy boats, check out stuff, learn a little bit of stuff. I was amazed how many people really wanted to learn about stuff. It makes going to these boat shows fun.
It does. When you can sit down, whether we have a group of 30 or just one person.
It was more fun one-on-one. The group
it always
nice,
is.
But
it always is. I mean, it's no different with charters. I'd rather have one person on the boat than six. You know, you get the special attention.
You really get to know the guy.
Custom tailor what you're teaching them to their needs instead of having 30 people where you're just giving pretty much the overview of what you're talking about.
Yeah, one guy said, I've learned more in the last 3 minutes than I have in the last 30 years.
Yeah.
It's surprising how fishing sometimes is supposed to be divine knowledge. You know, the supreme deity is supposed to come down and go, yes, son, you know how to fish. Yeah. Smack you on the
heel.
You are a fisherman. You know, you will learn. Love this.
You hit on it. People come down here from up north, been fishing all their lives, and once they cross the Florida-Georgia line, they forget how to fish.
And it's amazing because I meet on a daily basis some people who are the most amazing fishermen, anglers from all over the place. I mean, literally halfway around the world. And they come here and they say, well, I don't know how to fish. I'm like, where have you been? Well, I've been fishing here and here and here and here. I mean, the hardest part of this job is to reboot them and get them to understand they know how to fish.
Basically, you know, what we're doing is rebooting them. It's no different.
No, you're basically, you know, doing a hard boot. You got to pull the plug on the machine, plug it back in, and boot it out and try and bypass safe mode without it working.
Exactly.
If you're in the computers, you get that.
It's weird how it works, but, I mean, the fishing really isn't that different. What'd you do up home? You put a worm on a hook, you threw it in the water. It's no different here. You put a shrimp on the hook, you throw it in the water.
But you don't have to put a sinker on and throw it out in the middle.
No.
He says, is that how you fish? Well, no. Then why would you do it here?
Right.
Do what you know how to do. It's too hard to learn new water, new lures, new techniques, new everything all at the same time. Learn the water. Try what you do. You might have the best fishing techniques anybody's ever seen in Florida.
Yeah.
You might catch more fish than anybody ever has.
Like
or
I've said,
it might be bad. And if it doesn't work, then come.
It doesn't
and we'll work
matter
it out.
Where you fish or what you fish for. Fish only care about three simple things: eat, reproduce, don't get eaten.
Yeah,
that's all they care about.
Yep.
That's it.
Not that different for me.
No, not at all.
You know, I had a fourth, hopefully, never mind, but, oh, God, no. Oh, audit time. Oh, God, it's just, Yeah. So anyway, everything's going on in March. Frank's being audited. The store's busy as heck. We've had the boat show. We do the seminars. We've been giving talks at fishing clubs. And you've been chartering every day. What's going on in the water?
Yeah. We've been doing a lot of snook and red fishing lately. And yesterday was, I guess you can say, the first official shark charter of the year.
The opening day of shark season.
Shark season.
There's no such thing as shark season. But this time of year, and it starts anywhere usually late March, but usually in April is when you really see the kickoff of the shark.
Yeah, April's when you usually get the big boys coming in.
And usually I remember when it was middle May. We wouldn't tell people, don't plan on tarpon or sharks to the middle of May. Right. And then the beginning of May, now the beginning, then the end of April, middle of April, and now we're already into...
Halfway through, not halfway, even halfway through March.
Not even halfway through March, and...
You know, the big boys are in.
You had a crazy day. You're out fishing, and you...
We went out, and I really wanted to get down closer to Boca Grande, and it was just too rough to go all the way down there, and we set up in a little hole in the harbor I call the taint. It's between the bottom and the middle hole.
So it taint the middle hole, taint
the bottom hole. It's right in between them.
Got it in between.
So
we if you're from the 70s, you'll remember that.
We set up there, and I expected some small sharks. I expected your black tips, your black nose, your sharp nose. I figured we're not seeing a whole lot of bonnet heads on the flats.
I would have never expected those. Would have said it probably won't happen.
I figured the bonnet heads have also moved out to the deeper water to start mating. We got out there, got set up, threw the big rods out, basically just to put them out there. You know, I didn't really expect it. And a lot of times when I shark fish, I give everybody a rod with shrimp on it. Sit here and catch 1,000 catfish.
Right.
I know you hate catfish.
But it keeps you busy until the shark hits.
Number one, it keeps you busy until the shark hits. But more importantly, you're sending out sick, lame, and lazy vibrations
that
attract these sharks.
You're sending out wounded, overexcited fish.
Right. You're constantly giving out that vibration that attracts a shark. And we did that for a while. We were catching some pretty nice bonnet heads. And I wasn't even ready for it. The big rod went off. And we had three teenagers on the boat, and the teenage girl went first, and we had that one on for about 10 minutes, and it tail whipped the leader and come off. Never got to see it. I knew it was big because we had to come off anchor and chase it. Got back, set back up half an hour later. I decided to put out a live jack. And it wasn't a small jack. It was probably a 15, 16-inch jack in hole. Put them through out there, and it took off. And that one we got to fight for about 15 minutes. Yeah. Another big one. Had to come off anchor for it. Did get to see a little bit of it. Just got to see that brown blob in the water as it, you know, got up off the bottom finally and bit right through the leader. And bit through the steel leader, bit through a 150-pound steel leader.
Okay, so
it was shredded. So usually when you see a shredded leader like that, it's a bull shark,
right?
Just the way their teeth are curved, it usually will fray that steel.
So when you're sitting there right now and you're in Toronto or Minneapolis or Cleveland, and you're thinking about going fishing, and you've got a 150-pound test pull strength steel cable on.
Yeah.
So you're fishing with a steel cable, and you get it back, and the fish has gnawed through it, because it wasn't a clean break. He just sat there and ground his teeth together until he chewed through the steel cable.
Yeah, your muskie and pike don't do that. They just don't do that.
Yeah, muskie's a really great fish, but chewing through a 150-pound steel cable.
Right. And we got set back up, got the baits back out there. sat there for about 15 minutes and the rod took off again, and it didn't take off fast. Click, 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 click. And when it does that, it's a big fish.
Because he doesn't care about...
No, doesn't care. He got what he wanted. He doesn't... And he doesn't have to worry about competition, so he doesn't grab it and run.
Because nobody's going to steal it.
Nobody's going to take it from him.
Because if you try and take it from him, he will eat you.
He doesn't have to push forward to get more. Sharks don't have hands, so they can't stuff their faces like we do. They pick it up, they move forward, open their mouth, and it flushes back further into their mouth so they can get another bite. When they don't take off fast, he's eating it. And
he has the entire bait.
He's got the whole thing in his mouth.
Yeah.
I set the hook.
And this was a 15, 16 inch fish?
Yeah. Set the hook, and it took off. And, you know, I told him, I said, okay, guys, throw the anchor. You know, there was no waiting for this to see how big it was. I knew as soon as I set the hook.
Okay.
Get off the anchor.
I gotta back you up a second. What we do when we're fishing for sharks or big fish, when he says throw the anchor's already out. You've got the anchor in place, and it's got a loop knot on it onto the boat. And your chum's out, you're sitting there still at anchor. And when we say throw the anchor, what we've done is tie buoys to the anchor line itself. And you get this monster fish on, and it starts screaming out, and hundreds of yards of line are gone. You're down to the end, you've got to get some line back. And there's no way to do it outside of get the boat going and follow the fish. And the boat will usually be faster, so you can crank. The person on the rod has to reel like a crazy person. You're cranking, 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 cranking. And you've got to try and get some line back on this fish. And so when he says throw the anchor, it doesn't mean put the anchor out. It means we're getting rid of the anchor.
Throw that rope. Get rid of it.
And the buoys, we will come back and find the anchor later. You
right.
do not have time to grab the anchor and bring it back into the boat. By then, everything would be over.
Yep.
You'd be out of line. Everything would be broke.
They'll spool you before you get that anchor out of the mud.
So what you're doing is you just literally throw the anchor line overboard, and you've got marker jugs on it, and you come back for your anchor when the fight's over.
Right. And we almost didn't have enough time to do that. You know, everybody was working at a pretty good pace.
It's amazing how fast everything happens.
Yeah, and I'm using Marquesa 40s with 300 and something yards of 40 pound mono on them.
Right.
And guys, we need to hurry. I see spool. We need to move.
Well, you figure you cast it out, you got 60, 80 feet of line out. So that's 10 to 20 yards of line.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden the fish hits and he starts taking off, and you don't realize it, but he's gone another 30 yards. So your first 90 yards are already out. And you got 60 to 90 yards of line out. And then all of a sudden, he gets stuck with it. And it's like getting a shark getting a hook in him. And now we use J hooks with the barbs flattened down.
Yeah. Well, not flattened.
Well, pinched down.
We pinch them. You don't want a smooth hook because then your bait doesn't stay on. If you pinch just the very edge of the barb, it'll make a lump on the shaft of that hook. And that will keep your bait from falling off.
And the reason we do this is circle hooks do not come out of fish. It's not a good thing. And if you're in a tendency of your line, now if you're sitting there on the beach and you've got a big rod out and you're, you know, having a beverage and goofing off, then circle hooks are good because the fish doesn't swallow them.
But well, if you're in not a just that, you're,
line,
you're on the beach.
Yeah.
You bring the shark up onto the sand and you take the hook out. He can't go anywhere. He's sitting on the sand.
Right.
Okay. Try it at the side of the boat.
And you've got bolt cutters and everything right there on the beach. You can get that hook. But when you're in a boat, it's very hard to remove the hook in some instances. So by not having a barb on the hook, by curling the point of that barb down where it can fall out, A, you can get your gaff down there and pop the hook out, and it comes out nice and easily. As long as you keep tension on the fish, you don't lose them.
Right.
But if for any chance, like the one did where it bit through your leader, that hook will fall out. It doesn't have to rot out. It doesn't have to. There's no blood poisoning going on. There's nothing like that. And it's no worse for the fish than if he ate a stingray.
Exactly.
If the shark eats a stingray, he's going to get zapped by the barb.
Sure.
And
you'll find hammerheads with dozens of barbs in the roof of their mouth.
Yeah. This is not cruel and unusual, because this is what happens to them all the time.
Yeah.
But what we try to do is make sure that it's no worse for them than what nature did to them.
Right.
You know, we give them a good aerobic exercise. You know,
give them a workout.
Give them a workout. Make sure, you know, it's like a stress test for their heart. Get some pumping and excited. You know, it's exciting for both you and the fish.
Oh, yeah.
Doesn't really, you're not really doing any harm to them by doing it that way. And the hook comes out easy, and if by any chance they do chew through the leader, the hook will literally just fall out. And
if you want to see how hard it is to get a hook out of a shark, get yourself a shrimp, put it out on the bottom in the middle of the harbor, and catch yourself a bonnethead with a 1/0 circle hook with a shrimp on it. You're going to get them in the corner of the mouth every time. The corner of the mouth is some of the thickest cartilage in the shark. It's that hinge that runs his jaw, and it gets in that hinge every single time. And that is the hardest place to get a hook out of a shark, is the corner of that mouth. Even with a J hook, it's harder to get out because that cartilage is so dense.
That's why I don't use a barb on sharks.
Right.
I started this decades ago when doing a lot of shark charters. I used to be rather well known, almost famous for my shark trips, because I would start people off on smaller sharks. I had four guys in the boat. Everybody's catching fish. We had quadruple hookups and double hookups and all that. And one I got out, and I couldn't get the hook out, so I pushed it through, pinched the barb down, took the hook out, did not have time to change the hook, so I just stuck a bait on it, threw it out, and then noticed there was no difference. We were still catching the fish. So
yeah, no difference in your hookups.
Every hook that came back, I'd flatten the barb down and throw them out. And now all of a sudden I could get the hooks out easily. I was doing almost no damage to the fish. It was the perfect, you know, scenario for this.
Yep.
And it was an accidental find that we've turned into a way of life. And the more we've studied it, the more we've worked with it. And we've got, I don't know, 20 years now. And it's worked out to be the best system.
Yeah.
Circle hooks are not the answer. They are one of the answers.
Correct.
And we're going to try and work hard to get rid of some of the circle hook laws, because getting it out of the fish is a problem. It's the damage you do removing the hook in a lot of cases that...
Yeah, and if you're not careful, it's even damaging to other fish.
Right.
You know, trout with that weak jawline.
Exactly. Trying to get a circle hook out can be a nightmare. And using... when we do tarpon, we get rid of the barbs on the treble hooks in anytime we're lure fishing. There's just a lot of stuff we try to do to make things better, keep the fish longer, not do damage. Everything you do in life, as long as you're getting better at it, that's the key.
Yep.
You know,
that's why I quit tagging sharks. Sounded like a wonderful idea. Something the clients could get even more engaged in with the sharks at the side of the boat. But it was just too detrimental to the sharks. It wasn't a good idea to do with clients. A lot of times they're a little unwilling to help measure an 8-foot shark at the side of the boat.
It's funny how when you're down and you see the very first time you get next to an 8-foot shark, and the hair on the back of your head starts to stand up.
Yes.
You get these little goosebumps. You're looking at your arms, and the hair is kind of going up. And you're in absolutely no danger.
No.
But there is a prehistoric primal...
Yes, it's fight or flight.
Yeah.
And when it comes to sharks, it's 95% flight.
Oh, yeah. You're sitting there right next to the boat. You've landed this. You're all excited. You're pumped full of adrenaline. All of a sudden, it's going out. And, it's there. And without noticing it, you've gone from right next to the gunwale, right next to the fish, and all of a sudden, you're standing back about 3 or 4 feet.
Yeah.
You're looking at it, and that prehistoric instinct in your brain goes, I should not be playing with this.
Exactly. You don't break rods during shark season. Now, if you're a tarpon fisherman, you're going to break a ton of rods.
Okay.
I will always at least break one or two rods every season on tarpon. 4 years fishing for shark, I have never broken a rod. Now, how do you break a rod with a tarpon? The client gets that 150-pound tarpon to the side of the boat, and they walk up to the gunwale to take a look at it, and they're putting themselves in a high stick situation.
Yeah, and as soon as the rod goes up to 12, 1 o'clock,
you're standing right above the fish.
Exactly. They want to get as close to that fish as possible.
One head shake, and that rod just shatters.
Right.
When a shark happens, they step back away from the gunwale. There's no high sticking in shark fishing. It doesn't happen.
They get them up, and it's right next to the boat, and all of a sudden...
Oh, God.
They're backing up. This is where it goes. I really want to be there. I really want to see this, but the part of self-preservation in your brain goes, no, I think I'll back up.
Right,
no,
right.
I ain't doing it.
And it was just... It was too hard, too much wear and tear on the sharks trying to get the tags in them, and...
So you do it on a private level when you go out and fishing for fun or with family or friends?
It's the same thing. It's just too much time at the side of the boat.
Oh, gotcha.
It's nice at the beach where you've got more control of the fish. Doesn't take you long to measure him, stick a tag in him, and send him on his way. He's not fighting you.
Right.
At the side of the boat, he's still trying to fight you. So it's just too much on the shark. It's too much wear and tear. I don't want to put any more damage or any hurt on them than I already have, so I've just quit doing it, period.
Okay.
And but the third shark that we caught...
Got to tell you, the crowd loves you for it, Captain. Yeah. Hey, Josh, Captain Greer. You can jump in. Cale's talking about a shark, and then we'll get you in here a little bit.
Got a few. The third shark that we had, we lost that one, too. That one was... My fault more than anything else. We had to pass the rod up underneath the anchor line. And when we passed it up underneath the anchor line...
It might be a little short.
A little short.
Robert's...
Never mind. Okay. When we passed that rod up underneath the anchor line, I bumped the drag, which free-spooled the spool. And
really?
It bird's nested it. But that didn't lose the shark. I actually was able to clear the bird's nest.
Loosen that nut up there. That one right there. No. Yeah, that big one there. Yeah. Raise it up. Now you can get it around over to you. There you go.
Hey, look at that.
But the slack that we had to give it caused the shark to turn directions. When it changes directions, leader comes across the teeth.
Oh.
And that one bit clean through. I mean, it looked... cleaner than any of the cuts that we do with our wire cutters.
So sharks are now either...
They're swimming around with wire cutters now.
Yeah. Sharks have wire cutters.
We're putting a stop to that today. Today we got the 400-pound cable.
Gotcha.
If they bite through the 400-pound cable, I quit.
Now, how many sharks did you land and get to the end of the
boat? I lost track of how many bonnet heads we caught. Three big sharks. We went 0-for-3. We didn't get a single one to the boat.
Well, you really weren't thinking about catching big sharks that day either. You were really thinking, well, okay, hopefully we'll get one, and a little added excitement. You were there catching a lot of smaller sharks.
Yeah, but I still go home and scream into my pillow when I go 0-for-3 on sharks.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's nothing like it when you're sitting out there. And some days it's just not going to happen. Like you say, you don't expect them to bite through 150-pound test cable.
It's not like they come willingly.
No. So, but it sounds like you had a great time. What I love about when you do the shark charters the way you do them is you get to start off with some smaller fish and literally hold the shark, feel the skin, figure it all out, and literally get very, very close and personal with them.
Yeah.
And then work your way up into the bigger sharks. And that just, to me, that is what it's all about. Getting there to very, makes everything more personal. You know, just catching the big sharks.
Yeah.
You know.
It's kind of your mentality. Don't play Stairway to Heaven first.
Right.
If I go out there and catch an 8-foot lemon off the bat, now what?
Right. you know, Stairway to Heaven should never be your first song.
That 7-foot bull just doesn't have the luster.
Yeah, so the cool thing about it is just getting excited and getting into all of it, and that helps people want to protect the environment more, want to keep everything going. And speaking of protecting the environment, Captain Josh Greer.
Hey, that's me.
Yes, there he is.
We see we've been protecting the environment from the overpopulation of turkey.
Well, you got to watch them. They get out of hand a little bit.
Yeah.
Things need to be balanced out.
Yeah. Need to be trimmed down.
I'm trying to see it. I don't know if that's his mic or him that I can't get any volume on.
Yeah. I can hear myself now.
There you go.
I couldn't even hear myself before.
Okay. That's better.
I try not to listen to myself, but.
Don't worry. No one else does either. So it's all good.
Yeah.
All right, so you've been on the water a lot lately, too.
Yes, I have.
And turkey hunting. So you've been doing
those bags under my eyes.
So what's up with turkey hunting this year?
It's actually very good. It's been a real good season. I only hunted 3 days, but we killed 3 birds, so.
Can't beat that.
That's pretty amazing.
Yeah. So, and there's still a bunch of birds out there. So we'll see what happens next Sunday. We're going to hunt again.
So how long is turkey season now?
To the end of March sometime. I'm not sure of the date. But really, you really only have the first couple weeks. And by then, the birds have kind of gobbled themselves out. They're not interested anymore.
Right. They've learned if they keep their mouth shut,
they'll stay alive. Yeah. Yeah.
Open your mouth and die.
Yeah, pretty much.
So.
Pretty much.
Now, turkey hunting's weird. Kale, you also turkey hunt, but Josh, you
no.
do it. No, you don't do it
I
anymore?
Quit turkey hunting down here. These birds are dumb.
Okay.
Nothing like the birds you're used to up north. This is a completely different species of turkey.
All right.
These are the Osceola. The eastern... actually, I won't say. The eastern birds are dumb.
Easterns are dumb.
I've called them across 4-lane highways in the springtime in their mating season. And all animals are like that. When you only get to breed once a year, you kind of get a little stupid.
Yeah, well.
So, guilty.
Yeah, I get that. Okay.
So, and they behave completely different. Back home, if it starts raining, you're done. They roost up inside the hemlocks. They don't like to be wet. They're done. I did that down here. It starts pouring down rain, so I pack up my stuff and leave. And as I'm leaving, there's 50 turkey in the field down below me out there eating.
Yeah, because it's more comfortable.
They don't call the same.
I'll tell you this much. The Osceola turkey is probably one of the most difficult turkeys to hunt.
Really?
It really is.
Easy to overcall them.
Very easy to overcall. Our birds do not make a lot of noise.
In other words, it's the eastern. It's very hard to overcall an eastern.
Yeah, easterns are probably, well, I won't say an eastern is the dumbest turkey, but probably the Merriams and the birds out west, they're just really stupid. But the Osceola, and that's why people pay $2,500 to come down here and shoot a turkey, because it's the hardest one to hunt, and it's only found in South Florida. It's basically found from about Orlando south.
Yeah, Highway 4.
Yeah, the peninsula of Florida there.
So like me, I'm only found Highway 4 and down. If you go north of I-4, you're probably not going to see me.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm not southern by birth, but definitely by choice.
Yeah, exactly. You know? So
I love it that I've got odd shorts and a t-shirt.
That's right.
This is the, you know, I look forward to warm weather.
Absolutely.
I like the cool. It's interesting, but nothing like warm weather.
Exactly.
So, now, you go out on these trips. These birds have amazing eyesight. So you really camoed up. You got a lot of camouflage on. And
we try to build blinds if we can. You know, just like palm fronds and stuff in front of you to keep you broke up. Turkey hunting's difficult.
Yeah,
I've seen a lot of people screw up turkey hunts.
Very good sense of smell. Very good eyesight. They're not colorblind. They're very sharp eyesight. 270 degrees of vision. They're amazing animals.
Yeah, they really are. And that's the cool thing about turkey hunting is when you do get that bird fooled, you know you've accomplished something, you know? It's not like deer hunting. And don't get me wrong, I love deer hunting, but it's not like deer hunting sitting in a stand and the stupid thing walks underneath you. He doesn't even know you're there. No, a turkey knows you're there. Well, he knows something's there. You know, he's thinking his female companion is there, but
yeah,
And you're on the ground with him. You're eye to eye with
him.
Now,
I can honestly say, if you can get a turkey to think you're his female companion, that is a feat. That is a feat. Now, if you were hunting Bigfoot or Sasquatch,
right.
You know, I could see how, you know, with a little bit of makeup, you could pull that off. But, you know.
I missed a turkey we've been watching for years back home. Got him called in, and he come in with three young Jakes, which are your teenagers.
Okay.
So they're real stupid.
Stupid. And I had...
They're like college kids stupid.
Yeah, they are. They really are. Spring break drunk college kids stupid. I had two foam female hens out there, decoys out there in the clearing, and I had my gun up, safety off. I was waiting for that big gobbler's head to clear the oak tree that he was walking behind. He was three steps from done. And out of the corner of my eye, I watched one of those Jakes try to mount one of those female decoys. And all it is very thin foam rubber that I had stuffed with newspapers, and it sits on a stake. So they swivel in the wind, and they look alive. So when he jumped on top of it, it just collapsed, and he fell over. And he gets up, and he looks around to make sure nobody saw it happen, and I just died laughing. Turkey taking off everywhere. Didn't get a shot. It just watching that out of the corner of my eye was priceless.
So humor is not the best hunting method.
No.
Okay. Anyway, back to the fishing, guys. Josh, you've been on the water. What's been going on out there?
Fishing's getting better. It's still kind of hit or miss. Yesterday, for me, was a miss. I don't understand it because the last 2 days before that was a hit. I don't know.
You can't run 100%, Josh.
I know, but we try to.
My son, you know you're not allowed to run 100% on fishing.
Yeah.
You have to have a bad day. This comes to you to keep you humble.
Yeah. I don't know if it keeps me humble. It keeps me mad when I get home.
Like Kira was saying, you go home, you scream into your pillow. Have you ever noticed, you know, people say, oh, well, it's got to be, you know, the angry customers and annoying ones, you know, they're just such a problem. And they're not, because you don't care.
No, I don't care about those. There's no way.
When you've got somebody on the boat that's rude or nasty or whatever, you really, your brain goes, okay, he catches fish, it's fine. He doesn't, it's fine. Who cares?
Right.
But it's the day you get that great couple on the boat, or those two guys that you just, boy, you love talking to them, you like spending time with them, and you want to give them the best fish of their life, and that was my worst days on the water.
And that was my yesterday. I had probably my best customers with me. These guys fish with me every week, and I like them. They're more like friends than they are customers anymore, and when they have a bad day, that hurts.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, see, I'm just the opposite. If I have good clients that have a bad day, we had a bad day. They've been out with me so many times, they understand.
Well, yeah, they understand, but they don't like it.
The people that are doing it for their first time ever on a charter that have the delusions of grandeur, and then you completely blow it for them.
Oh, yeah, that's the worst part.
Those are the ones that really hurt.
Because those probably
scream all night into your pillow.
Those probably aren't going to be your customers.
Yeah, they're not coming back.
You sit there, and it breaks your heart. It really does. People think, oh, man, you got the life of a fishing guide, and it's so cool. You get to fish all day.
Take a picture of the side of my head. This is what life of a fishing guide gets you. Really bad raccoon eyes and gray hair.
Yeah. It's when it all works, it is the best job in the world.
Right.
But it is.
When you do have those off days, mm-hmm. and it hurts, and people don't really understand how much what happens when you go home at night and you're sitting there and you're going over every single moment of that day wondering what you could have done, how you could have made that happen.
Yeah.
And sometimes the gods just prevent it. Poseidon says, no fish for you.
Yeah.
No fish for you. You're not allowed to have fish today.
And we're not weathermen. We don't get paid to fail.
Yeah, that's true.
That's what happened yesterday.
So what happened the day before?
The day before was great. We caught the living bejesus out of trout. That's all we did. I had a family of six on the boat.
So I'll tell you what, you're one of the only ones out there catching a lot of trout.
Yeah.
Everybody I talk to is saying the trout have just thinned way out.
Oh, they did yesterday.
You caught the last one leaving the harbor?
They thinned way out yesterday.
were you catching them
on? I shouldn't say that yesterday was a complete fail. We did catch some fish. We just didn't catch the fish that I like to catch. You know?
So, in other words, the customer had a good time. They were pretty satisfied. Yeah. But you it personally
wasn't the day.
wanted yeah. more. And that's one of the things that is really hard to rectify sometimes. When you're listening to Charter Boat Captains talk,
yeah, we have an
expectation of what we can do and how many fish we can catch.
Right.
And then the day doesn't live up to your expectations.
Yeah, yesterday was just a lot of jacks. We caught a lot of jacks, a bunch of ladyfish. We caught some trout, just small trout. We ended up with, I think, 3 keeper trout. They were nice fish, though. They were 17, 18 inches. So.
But see, now me, right. I love catching jacks.
And they're fun, but...
You know, to be politically incorrect, it's the ultimate Chinese fire drill on the boat.
Right.
Because you've got everybody going one way, the other way, and you sit there and you look at the guys and say, okay, when 3 of you break off, we're going to go catch that 4th fish.
Yeah, right.
You know?
Right.
And it becomes kind of a bet, you know, between the people as to who can keep the fish on to go actually right. see it.
Right.
Yep. Now, have you been catching snook out there?
No, I haven't.
Okay.
Well, I take that back. Monday afternoon, evening time, I went and fished the dock lights with some guys fly fishing, and we caught a bunch of snook.
Yeah, but the dock lights don't count.
That's cheating, though.
Well, I won't say don't count.
No, that is one of the most difficult things you can do is go catch fish on the dock lights.
No, it is take a fly rod.
But you had some great guys from, what, Montana?
Montana, yeah.
Because I talked to them and... set you up with that charter because you're big into fly fishing.
Yeah.
And
he's big in a lot of things.
He's just big all the time.
Kind of big wherever
he's
any
bigger and eat grass.
So fly fishing in there is absolutely spectacular.
It's one of those times, the very few times, that a fly rod will outfish anything else. And
it's
really
about
will.
The presentation.
Yeah.
It's quiet.
You know, those fish are spooky. You know, that fly lands soft. It's small because that's what they're eating is little tiny stuff in that light. You know, little shrimp, little...
So no clousers, nothing like that.
Unweighted, little tiny white bait fish patterns.
Got to be quiet on those dock lights.
Yeah, and but we did real good doing that.
So...
And I talked to them yesterday morning when I left the shop yesterday. They were coming in, and they went back. I knew they would. They've been doing that every night, so...
They're having a ball.
Yeah, they're having a ball.
Great guys from Montana. Really nice people. And when you can do snook on a fly rod, and now I will tell you, if you're sitting out there and you love fly fishing or you want to really get into it, it's not easy. And there is a pattern, there is a technique to doing it.
Yeah.
And your best bet is to hire somebody who actually understands how to do it for a night.
Right.
And after that, you're pretty much good on your own. But without someone to teach you that, it can be as frustrating as anything I've ever seen.
Oh, snooking. Well, the worst part is about the lights is you can see the fish.
Right.
You see them. You know, if you're just going around during the daytime casting at docks, you have no idea if there's a fish there or not. But at night with a light, you know there's fish there. And then when they don't eat, that drives you even... crazier. It's, you know, it'd drive you crazy because you could see
them.
I have
seen guys literally, don't do it, that's, boom, the rod goes down. They just get so frustrated. And I mean, try and want them, you know. The rods I use in my charters, those were $100 a rod. The reels were a couple $100. I'm sorry, you threw that on the deck, you're buying it.
That's right.
You know.
So, but the fishing's been hit or miss, like I said. You know, yesterday was a miss. 2 days before was a hit.
And if you want to meet Captain Josh, Captain Kale, the whole gang, we've got...
Saturday,
the tent event. Everybody's going to be here. They all have labels and badges on, so you know who they are. And, you know, it's going to be a great day. It's going to be a very, very interesting day Saturday. Next year, I'm hoping to put a casting tank in out in the back because we're going to be expanding next year, and if we do it next year, you know, it's always an F. We'll see how this year goes, but so we've got some really cool stuff planned for next year if we do it again.
Yeah,
you never know. I mean, there's a thousand things, reason something might not happen.
Well, the even if Frank's probably not going to like this, but even if you come here and don't buy a thing, which mm-hmm. you're an idiot if you do, because obviously the deals are going to be better than you'll ever get anywhere.
Yeah, the deals are spectacular.
Just the amount of knowledge that will be within
the reason this area. We did this and the reason we've worked for 8 years is it's a great learning experience.
I learn stuff. You know, if you come here that day and spend an hour walking around talking to these guys, if you don't learn something, you're an idiot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I learn something every time I'm here.
You
got guys, Gary Loomis.
I don't think you can.
Mark Nichols. Those guys, you can't get that knowledge.
I don't think you can just spend an hour.
Right.
We tell people, come with a lot of time. Because you're going to talk to Jim at the Rapala booth.
Right.
And all of a sudden, and then you leave that, and then you're talking from Sean from American Fishing Wire, and then you see Charles and Vicky from Rockport Rattler, and you get to learn about them, and then Eric from Miralure, and Mark Nichols, and Chris, and I mean, there's so many cool people to talk to. It's the thing I'm most proud of, and yes, I would appreciate you buying something. This is a very, very expensive proposition to do.
Absolutely.
This is not easy. Gary Loomis comes in from Washington State. Charles and Vicky come from Texas. Wes, the owner of Rattle Trap, from Louisiana. Anthony comes from Illinois. Sean comes from Pennsylvania. We got Penn from Pennsylvania and South Carolina and Florida. Mark Nichols drives up. Eric drives down. I mean, all these people come from everywhere to meet and get involved with the people down here.
And this is why Frank ages like a dog in March.
Yes.
Oh, God.
Look at him.
Yeah, I'm going to die.
He needs to be taking out back a shot right now.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
No, I mean, that's what's exciting to me. That's what's exciting to me. Is not the deals are exciting. Yeah, I mean, you're going to save a ton of money on fishing equipment this weekend. But the amount of knowledge that's here is really incredible. And, you know, and I do shows all over the place for Penn and for Rapala and all these big shows, these big distributor shows and big consumer shows at Bass Pro and everything, they don't get these people there. You don't even get the opportunity to meet those people there.
No.
You know,
maybe.
So you get
maybe
ICAST. The problem at ICAST is they're so busy, you never get to talk to them. Here, and you're at a show. Here, you're at Frank's.
Yeah.
You're hanging out, you know.
If you go to Bass Pro, you get a pro staff who tells you how great his product is because his company's giving to him for free. If somebody's giving you something for free, you're not going to badmouth them.
And the only thing about it is they are so big. You know, Bass Pro is so big.
Yeah, they can't have Gary Loomis at 35 stores.
Yeah, at 25 places. And yeah. They are just so big. It's very hard for them to accomplish this. I think one of the reasons we were able to accomplish it, because we are a tiny little store. Right. Let's face it, we're definitely by no means a big store.
No.
1,800 square feet is what we've got of retail space. And when I wreck this office this year and move into the back one, we're going to add another, you know, a few feet. I don't know if this is going to help much.
But it's also a very good R&D opportunity, research and development opportunity for these companies.
I have watched one of the major companies, I won't say which one, actually was telling me what they were going to do before the show, over the next year or two. Spent the day at the show talking to the people here, and the best part about it is we don't have the whiny complaining people.
Right.
You know, these are really cool people, ask great questions. And because of the interaction they had with the consumers from Southwest Florida, they changed their business model for the next year. And it's literally put them back on, in my opinion, back on track. They listen to the people, you know, and it's not about them telling what to do. It's just about them asking questions.
Yeah.
Right. So what about this?
So much,
what about
they
that?
They get so much consumer input from the show. That, I mean, look how many products have come out basically because our customers come in here and say, have you ever thought about doing this instead?
Yeah. So, yeah, it's a good chance for
that doesn't people. Mean come and bitch at everybody about what they did wrong.
But it's not about complaining about what you did. It's about asking, can you make something that does this? Can you make something that does that?
Right. Oh, that's what I'm saying.
Give them an idea. You get about 2-3 minutes with each one of these guys. If you're lucky, you'll get five. I mean, let's face it, there's a lot of people here. And the thing I love best about the people is they want to know stuff, so they ask a couple questions, they figure out what they want to know, and then they politely move on to the next person. Right. It's the most amazing thing, and I am known in the industry for a couple of things which aren't as flattering
some
as
of those
I'd like
we're not
to.
Allowed to say on the
yes, but the one thing I am known for is the greatest clientele, the best customer base on the planet. We have the best customers on the planet. They're the nicest people, and I am literally famous for that in the industry. Our clientele, that is what has made me a legend in the fishing business. My clientele.
All right. Well, and that's what's unique about this situation with the tent sale of the show. It's a different atmosphere. It's not your
it's
average.
It's the parking lot.
Well, it's a parking lot.
It's pegboard, a 2x4 frame.
Right.
It's not the glamorous.
But these guys feel comfortable when they come here. It's like coming home, you know?
Right. This is what it looks like if ICAST and Sanford and Son got smashed together.
They got in a train wreck and they had a tent sale.
If you had Sanford and Son running headlong into the ICAST show, that's for sure. Yeah. Because it's not a glamorous event by any means. This was meant, and it still is, to talk to these people.
Right.
And
well, it's for the customer, which no one does that anymore.
Yeah, it's for our clientele. Right. And these guys love it, and they love making deals. And it's not about the money. I wish it was sometimes.
You know what?
I really wish it was.
That's the one thing that's really surprised me more than anything is that these guys actually asked to come back every year.
Yeah.
Blows my mind. That they love coming here and doing this.
Yeah.
It's
because they work their butt off.
It's busy.
You watch Gary Zeidman behind that.
These guys work harder than they work any three given days of their life.
Yeah.
At this shop. That the 8 hours that they're here.
It's amazing.
It's hot. And it's 1,000 people.
It's 800 square feet.
These goofballs have to come back every year.
Yeah, we have a lot of fun. Anyway, we shouldn't be just yakking about this. We should actually be telling you about fishing. But, you know, and sometimes we actually get to that. Okay, here's the question before we wrap this up. I'm going to let you go first, Cale. What are you going to... If a guy's going out tomorrow to go fishing, because you got tomorrow and Sunday, because Saturday you're going to be here at the tent sale.
That's right.
If you're going out fishing tomorrow, what's your best bet for the guy? What should he go after, and about what should he use for bait, and where should he go?
Go out there and go catch some big sharks on your light tackle, break your rods, and then come back in here Saturday and buy new ones.
Good answer, Cale.
Actually, I think you should start at the 41 Bridge. Especially if you have any kids or you have any family down here that has never experienced fishing down here. There's a good school of ladyfish and jacks hanging around the 41 Bridge first thing in the morning. Then I would probably head out into the center of the harbor, get out there by the deeper holes.
Keep 2-3 ladyfish, 1 or 2 jacks, if you've got a big rod.
Yeah, and put that out for some bigger sharks. Drop some small rods down there. There's been squirrel fish. Blue runners.
That's another reason you don't want to keep a lot of ladyfish or jacks. You want 1 or 2 of each.
Right.
And then go out and take for some big fish.
Take your shrimp after you put those big rods out on the bottom and drop those shrimp down. Catch a bunch of catfish, catch squirrel fish, catch blue runners, catch jacks, catch Spanish mackerel. Occupy yourself and help bring in those bigger sharks, and I think you'll put a good day together.
Okay.
We're going to go do it today.
Now, on the interim, because I know I stay on topic so much, that's a great thing. But, Josh, you ever seen squirrel fish in the harbor?
Not that I can remember.
I've been doing this...
But I caught one yesterday in a cast net in Pine Island Sound.
This is the first time...
I don't know what it was doing
well,
there.
I fished the harbor
back in like 1980 for the very first time, or 81 or something like that, 79, 80, I don't remember, it was a long time ago. Never, I've caught them a couple in Boca Grande Pass, but usually that's rare, very rare, to have them in the harbor and in Pine Island Sound. Now, I could be wrong, I just never heard of it.
I've never caught one
in
15 years.
I was literally catching some pinfish yesterday in a pothole in the Sound and caught one in a cast net. It was only about 4 inches long, 5 inches long, but it was most
here.
At first, I was like, what is that?
I'm steadily
getting squirrel fish.
Steadily getting squid in the cast net at Marker 2.
Yeah, squid and cuttlefish, I think they're called.
Yeah, there were some cuttlefish in there, which I've never seen.
You know, those I've seen. I've seen squid and cuttlefish.
Blue runners.
I've seen squid in the harbor.
You usually don't see blue runners in the middle of the harbor this time of year.
Never seen blue runners in the harbor.
Occasionally, I'll get them at the end of summer.
Yeah.
But, I mean, we were catching them steady. I had four of them in the live well for bait.
Wow. So, all right. So, anyway, we've determined strange year, never seen a couple of things happening. Mm-hmm. And now, Josh, for tomorrow, what's your best advice for people? Any place, anywhere, anything?
I would say get down in Pine Island Sound and fish the potholes. There's a ton of fish in those potholes right now. You can just drift across those flats, but, you know, look for the sand holes.
Are you doing popping corks or just free line
I'm
kind of
mixing
drifting?
It up. No, I'm doing a popping cork and a shrimp, and usually have a guy throwing a jig head with some kind of a soft plastic on it. That's what's been getting those bigger fish, is actually a DOA paddle tail. They have like a silver glitter color. It looks like, I don't know what it looks like. It's really shiny, though. Throwing that on a jig head.
It's shiny. I want it. Exactly. Ooh, look at that.
And that's what's been, actually, that's what the past week, that's what has caught all the big trout, is that jig head. Cool. And you catch a lot of everything on the shrimp, obviously. And you do catch some nice trout on the shrimp. But that, for some reason, that, and working it pretty fast, too. I mean, a constant twitch, you know, hard, real hard jerks of the rod. It's been working real good.
Okay, well, thank you, guys, and we're gonna get wrapped up. I've got a ton of work to do today.
I gotta go fishing too.
Both these guys got charters today, so if you want to get a hold of them, click their pictures right next to this interview, and it will take you to their website.
I'm gonna do a shameless plug here too. I just got my website up, so xxloutdoors.com.
Okay, I will link to that. So that's good information. I don't know where we had your link before, but we will link you to there.
Gotcha.
And so click Josh's picture right next to this, and it'll take you right to his website. Captain Kale, of course, and Fish and Frank in the Chair. Thanks for listening to us, guys. Sorry we rambled on so much, but it's been a while since we've been on the air.
Yeah, it has been. It's been a busy, busy month.
It has.
March is just March Madness. It's crazy here. So
absolutely.
We will see you guys. Hopefully before, but if not, Saturday morning. We open at 6. But these are the owners, the CEOs, the presidents of these companies. So I cannot force them to be here at 6. Somewhere between 6 and 8 a.m., everybody's going to show up. And on the flip side of that, again, these are the guys who run international companies. So I can't make them work a 16-hour day. So somewhere usually around 3 o'clock, we'll lose one or two of them. A lot of them, you know, will hang out for the entire day. But once the factories are here, set the deals, and we know what to do, we will have someone come in and keep the stuff going as long as things last during the day.
Yep.
We'll be winding it up by 8 o'clock at night, tearing everything down, and when the factory's day is over, it's over.
And no rain checks, except on fishing line, correct?
Yeah, if you can't wait to get your... We can't talk about it on the air, though. It's illegal. We've got some deals, but we will take care of you on that. So, anyway, Fish and Frank and Captain Kale and Captain Josh, thanks for listening.